It's still real to me, damn it!
Everybody, welcome to this week's edition of the Still Real Test Show, episode number 670 for December 15th, 2022. Welcome to this week's edition of SRTU. We'll recap and review NXT Deadline and so much more on this week's edition of the show. I'm one half of the program. I am Jeff Peck, joined every single week by my co-host, Dr. Trey Franklin. Dr. Trey, have you been posting any racy content online, my friend?
Yeah. Well, you haven't been?
I don't have a Fantime account. I do not. And now I know why you do.
I have an OnlyFans account because that's the classy one now, apparently.
True. True.
I had never heard of Fantime until this week. So there, that kind of shows you how the loop I am. But no, my racy photography stuff ended circa 2006, the first time somebody actually helped me get a replica belt. And of course, as a guy, if you get a replica belt, you have to do the Shawn Michaels Playgirl pose at least once, and then you're done with it. So yeah, right, 2006, 2007, that was the end of my online racy photography experience.
Yeah, it's been quite a week. There's, you know, Dr. Trey, I figured this is our last programming note, our last regular type of show that we do now for the next 3 weeks. We go into holiday programming mode. We'll recap the year. We'll give our bold predictions, give our award show, look at 2023 all over the next 3 weeks. This is the last time that we like sit down and look at this week's news. And I was like, you know, we'll go over NXT Deadline. I figured, oh, we'll talk a little bit about ROH Final Battle. And I figured, oh, you know, there probably won't be that much stuff. It's a quiet time of the year in professional wrestling. And boy, oh boy, was I wrong. And the gift that keeps on giving is the year 2022 in the world of professional wrestling. I don't remember a newsworthy year like the one that this year has given us. And there are two major news stories that are involved in this week's edition of the show. One that I think we'll hear about as an update to one that we'll hear about in a couple weeks during the award show. And a late entry into one of the bigger news stories of the year coming down from the NXT branch. The first one being, Dr. Trey, according to reports, Vince McMahon reportedly wants to make a WWE comeback. No shock there. What's the story say? Let's get into it. According to Wrestling Inc., in a new Wall Street Journal report, primarily focused on Vince McMahon facing new demands from two women accusing him of sexual assault, sources reveal that McMahon is looking to, quote, make a comeback at WWE. The sources said that McMahon believes he received, quote, bad advice from people close to him, end quote, regarding his earlier retirement, and that he ultimately could have weathered the storm of the investigation and allegations. Despite McMahon's retirement, he has maintained majority ownership of WWE through owning the majority of WWE shares and continues to wield the majority of voting power, making a comeback at least possible. Since his departure, WWE has been run by co-CEOs Nick Khan and Stephanie McMahon, as well as WWE Chief Content Officer Paul Triple H Levesque. In November, after WWE announced that the internal investigation into McMahon's conduct had concluded, Fightful reported that a WWE spokesperson told them McMahon was, quote, done, and, quote, would have not been returning to the roles that were taken over by Triple H and several others. Shortly after the Wall Street Journal report, Fightful's Sean Ross Sapp addressed the idea of McMahon return on Twitter, writing, quote, numerous WWE higher-ups that I've spoken to in recent months have indicated to us that they want nothing to do with that and are happy with the direction, end quote, Sapp said. And then he further said, I haven't heard one person that are itching for a Vince return. Dr. Trey, surprise, not surprise, Vince wants to make a WWE comeback, allegedly.
God damn it, Jeff Peck, I got back in the news. I've never been hotter. Am I surprised by it? No. This is just like Donald Trump announcing he wants to run for president in 2024, even though, you know, the majority of people are kind of like, eh, really? Do you really want to? It's kind of the same thing. Like, I'm sure they're, like, I know nobody's going to go on record because supporting Vince is kind of like supporting Trump at this point. Like, you're going to get egg on your face if you come out openly and do it. I mean, are there some long-tenured guys in the company that probably miss Vince a little bit? Yeah. But, you know, the direction of the company's better than it's been in quite a while. The morale in the company, typically on most days, is better than it, you know, was under Vince. Have you heard, I mean, like we used to hear all the time, Vince tore up the script an hour before SmackDown or an hour before Raw. We don't hear that anymore. We don't hear about the chaos behind the scenes. We don't hear about, you know, don't sneeze around. Like, you don't hear any of the crazy stuff you used to hear. It's basically like, hey, this is what the show's doing. This is where we're going. This is da 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 da. Like, to me, I would understand, like, anybody that's, you know, in that company that's under the age of 50 is probably happy with the direction of the company. But, you know, Vince is one of those guys that Vince is one of those guys that just reminds me, like, he just can't retire. He was a workaholic. Like, how do you fill that time? How do you fill that void when it's just completely taken away from you? So I understand his desire. I just don't see anybody that's clamoring for the Vince return right now.
Yeah, I was thinking about this recently when I was watching Raw. Like, there's been a lot of stuff about Vince lately. I actually watched about a couple hours before we sat down and record, Dr. Trey. I don't know if you saw it or watched it yourself or heard that it was out there, but Vice did a two-hour documentary called The Nine Lives of Vince McMahon. And over the last couple of weeks, I've been watching WWE, and I'm like, is there like a real big difference of what I'm watching now versus everything that I've watched my entire life, especially recent memory? And there is. I'm enjoying WWE a lot more because creative makes sense. Storylines are being fulfilled. And Raw, which is at times a very hard three-hour watch, lately has been an enjoyable three-hour watch. I mean, I don't want to show my full cards here with the holiday programming coming up, but I feel like WWE has turned a corner very positively that has made it fun to be a wrestling fan again. Is it going to be as popular as it was when Dr. Trey and I, you know, were around during the Attitude Era? Probably not, but it's a very enjoyable watch, and that has a lot to do with what Triple H is doing from a content perspective. I don't want Vince McMahon back. I respect everything that he's done as a promoter and as a wrestling fan, the sexual assault allegations aside. You know, if the stuff that's being reported is true, and when there's smoke, there's fire, it's a huge black eye and a disgusting look at him as a person outside of the wrestling ring. But I'm enjoying everything that's going on. And when you look at Vince retiring and then, you know, reportedly wanting to make a comeback, it's no surprise. And as a fan, I'm like, I don't want him back. I like the product the way it is. The product is really good. The product is very successful right now. Their stock price was very, very high. Then this report came out and it dropped. I love what WWE is doing right now, Dr. Trey. And even if the sexual assault allegations weren't in the background and Vince just retired due to old age and he was itching for a comeback, I would still say I don't want to see him back. And as a fan, you know, it sucks to say that because of what the guy has done for the world of professional wrestling, but WWE right now is in much better hands than it was prior to his retirement in WWE.
Yeah, I mean, the product feels fresher.
Yes.
It feels a little hipper. I don't know if if it's appropriate for me, being a 45-year-old father, to say the word hipper, but it does feel, you know, the storylines aren't corny. They aren't, you know, they aren't like, we're not
like getting, Ezekiel?
We're not getting Karrion Kross in a gladiator outfit. Yes. You know, those things. We're not getting those weird call-ups and, hey, we had this girl, we're going to rename her Dewdrop. We're not getting that stuff. We're not getting Eve? Was that her name? Eva Marie. We're not getting the Eva Marie comebacks that nobody was clamoring for. Like, it just feels like a modern pro wrestling show. It feels like a little bit of you know, you and I are a little bit older. We can remember Joe Paterno's, the Bobby Bowden's, mm-hmm. those old football coaches that probably stayed around a little bit too long and the program suffered. And I kind of feel like that with WWE, where like Vince probably stuck around a little bit too long. The product suffered because of it. And now you got, you know, a new coach in there and the team's doing much better. So I kind of feel like that kind of vibe. You know, you were a long-standing Yankees fan. George Steinbrenner had that kind of feel to him, you know, mm-hmm. before his passing, where, like, it kind of felt like the game was passing George by, and it wasn't until his passing and his sons kind of turned the team over to Brian Cashman that the Yankees got relevant again. So it just kind of has that vibe. And those guys, they just could never let go of stuff. And I don't blame them. Like, you know, I was even the other day, like, I'm sort of looking at my 401ks and IRAs and things like that. I'm like, I just can't picture myself retiring and just sitting around the house doing nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, that just doesn't appeal to me. Like, I'll probably be one of those guys that is working until the day he dies. Those guys like us, those grinders, that grind culture mentality that apparently is frowned upon now, like, we want to be active. And sometimes you just find a spot where you're like, okay, nobody wants me. What else can I go do? I mean, you can always ask Rock if he can help out with the XFL.
Yeah, I guess he could. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that was going out there that people felt like that he just can't be sitting still and that something is going on. I guess that something going on was a potential return at WWE. More on the story here. Further details are trickling out concerning a possible return, despite the fact that the idea is reportedly not very appealing to those still working for WWE behind the scenes. This further report, again, coming from Wrestling Inc. On the latest Wrestling Observer Radio, Dave Meltzer confirmed that the possibility of McMahon coming back is, quote, pretty serious, stating McMahon controls nearly 80% of the voting power as a stockholder for the corporation. However, according to WWE's governance guidelines, McMahon will only be able to become CEO again through a vote from the WWE Board of Directors, while anything is possible, depending on the views of the company's board. This could prevent McMahon from once again becoming CEO. Meltzer also shed doubt on the idea that it's a coincidence that details coming out concerning additional allegations against McMahon have been made public at the same time the former CEO made it clear that he'd like to return to the company. This implies that these new allegations were made public in an attempt to deter or prevent McMahon from stepping back into power. One added complication to the whole situation, because a company sale has to be approved by shareholders, is that McMahon could theoretically prevent WWE from being acquired by a larger company, something that has been rumored as a possibility for the last several years. If that were to happen, McMahon shares would either be cashed out or he would gain some shares of the new larger company. This, however, would essentially prevent him from ever coming back into power, making a strong possibility that McMahon would decide to block a sale should an acquisition be offered. I think a big part of this story here, Dr. Trey, to me, is the coincidence of this story coming out and then, you know, obviously the reports that he may be making him want to return as well. I think the WWE does not want him back. And, you know, there were rumblings that he wanted to come back, and maybe somebody on the inside slid this story over to the Wall Street Journal and said, hey, got an update for you. And this is presumably the last nail in the coffin to allow Vince to return to World Wrestling Entertainment. I would agree with Dave Meltzer in that standpoint. I think it's just a little bit interesting, like, this comes out around the same time that Vince may be, you know, telling people, like, I want to come back. This is bullshit. I got the wrong advice to retire. Your thoughts on the update here and the presumable idea that maybe someone from the inside is definitely preventing Vince to make that return?
Oh, yeah, I'll start the ended part there. I definitely agree with somebody from inside WWE's leaking out those stories. Like, I don't always believe in coincidence. And so when something like this comes up, it's like, yeah, somebody put that out there because they don't want Vince back. And I get that. Like, the company is a much more progressive company now than maybe it ever has been. You'd also, like, you know, Vince's allegiance to Trump. You know, the fact that they've been friends, Linda worked for Trump and the Trump administration, you know, that was always kind of a weird cloud that kind of hung over him. You know, all the stuff in the past about Vince being racist and the other thing, those are all things that kind of tied in there. Now you look at WWE and how they're presented, it's a much more progressive, I don't want to say, you know, liberal company, but it is much more of a neutral company. Like, they don't really feel like they have strong political ties to the left or to the right. So it makes a lot of sense in that point. My only issue is it is weird that we had all these allegations and claims come out, but yet we've had no settlement come out. Like, nothing's been settled. There's no criminal actions being filed. There's nothing like that going on. So it is kind of like, you know, he said, she said, and there's no validity to it. I mean, we just went through this with the NFL with the Deshaun Watson stuff. It's just, it puts a black eye on wrestling as a whole when you get these stories that come out, because then people are like, well, this, like, do I want my 5-year-old watching this stuff if this is what's going on behind the scenes? That's why I kind of wish, like, the Vince's stories would just kind of be pushed to the back, because I think Stephanie, Nick, and Triple H are much more socially conscious of the image that WWE puts out there. I think that's a much better look for the company going forward, to either grow or be sold or however they want to do it. But I think they're much more in line with modern family standards for their company.
So let's wrap it up here, Dr. Troy, before we get to the next story. Will Vince make a WWE comeback in 2023?
If it is, it would be like a bloodshed coup. I don't see it, but like you said, he owns 80% of the company. He's the largest shareholder in the company. And we just saw what happened with Twitter when their largest shareholder decided to take over the company. So there is that route. But in that process, he would alienate everybody in his family around him by doing that.
Yes.
And at 70-some-odd years old, does he want to take that chance where, all right, I'll lose everybody, but I'll get back the company? It's kind of the Thanos Gamora thing. You know, you have to sacrifice your family to get the one thing back that you want. So I know Vince can be an asshole, but I don't know if he's that big of an asshole.
Hunter is doing a great job. I don't want to see him go. I am enjoying what they're doing on WWE television right now. Feel free to chime in at SRTU Podcast on Twitter. Moving on to the next story here, Dr. Trey, we had a massive upset on AW Dynamite last night as Action Andretti, someone I've never heard of, admittedly, and I guess I should have known because he's been around since 2019, dabbling around in GCW, CCW, currently the Maryland Championship Wrestling heavyweight champion. He defeated Chris Jericho on AW Dynamite, and dare I ask, was it the greatest wrestling upset of all time? Everybody immediately jumps towards Razor Ramon 123 Kid from Monday Night Raw on May 17th, 1993. Sean Waltman 123 Kid has chimed in on it. I'll read his stuff in a little bit. But Dr. Trey, let's kick it off here. Was it the greatest wrestling upset of all time?
Probably. If you look at name value, like I, with 123 Kid, I knew who 123 Kid was. I watched him on ESPN. I think it was Global Championship Wrestling. He was the Lightning Kid. That's why when he had that match with Razor, he was literally had covered in lightning bolts.
Yep.
But I had at least heard of him. I honestly had never heard of Action Andretti. The only Andretti I knew was Mario. So I don't. And the only Action I knew was Jackson. So
and Bronson. Know. You know Bronson now.
Action Bronson. Oh, that was that rapper guy.
Yes. I love the sincere confusion. I do. Okay. I'll take your word. Oh, that guy. Yes, I do. Hooks on.
I hear Bronson. I think of either Charles Bronson or Bronson Reed. Like, he's not even my top two Bronsons of all time.
True, true.
So, on paper, probably the greatest upset of all time. But it's almost like, but it's AEW. Like, does that make, I don't know if that makes sense. Like,
Okay, that's interesting. Elaborate a little bit more, because it doesn't out on the onset, I'll be honest.
Okay, so lately, in my head, I have been comparing AEW to a lot of the TNA Impact Hogan Bischoff era. Like, the bookings don't make sense. The storylines don't make sense. They're kind of throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks and see what pops off and really grabs newsworthy stuff. I don't know if on paper I can, I mean, in reality, if I go, is it more shocking to me? Like, the Razor 123 Kid match shocked me. This one here, I kind of went, huh, well, that's weird.
That's interesting. That's a very interesting point you're making, because I was too young when that match happened in 93. So I did not see it as it happened. Did you see it as it happened, Dr. Trey? Did you Were you watching Raw that night?
I was, what did you say, it was 95? So I was
93, May 17th, 1993.
It was 4 days after my birthday. I was a sophomore in high school.
Okay.
So Raw was must-see TV for me because I was a that was my thing. Yeah. I was a wrestling fan. So when it happened, because like, once again, like when I saw the match, I'm like, oh, that's that kid from Global Championship Wrestling I see on ESPN.
And he did AWA stuff too, right?
Yeah, because the AWA and Global Championship kind of merged.
Yeah.
But that's one of the first time I ever saw Booker T and Stevie Ray as the Ebony Express was on that Global Championship Wrestling thing. So I couldn't do who this guy was.
Mm-hmm.
So when I saw him, like, and that's like I said, when I saw him, like, that's he had lightning bolts all over his gear. Like, he didn't have 1-3. It was just, that's what Vince ended up calling him. So, well,
he was given, like, multiple different names then.
Yeah.
Like, it was like the Lightning Kid, the Kid.
Yeah, he was all over the place. So that one really shocked me because and then when you look at the size of those guys, like, Razor dwarfed 1-2-3 Kid. Like, he was just 120 pounds heavier and 6 inches taller. You look at Jericho and Action Andretti. They're about the same height, and they're not like watching Jericho fight Action Andretti was like watching Jericho fight a younger version of himself. Like, they're size wise, they're very comparable. Speed wise, they're very comparable. It's just one's got a ton of experience and one has none. So, like, the physical stature of the upset, I think, also affects it to me because it was a tiny little guy beating up a much bigger guy that everybody had heard of, and this kid was somebody that nobody had heard of. So, to me, like, the actual shock value was higher, where this one was kind of like, you know, like I said, that's interesting. Are they going somewhere with this? And then the fact that Tony Khan puts out, Action Andretti is now all elite. I'm like, because the guy got one win? Like,
yeah.
It's just kind of weird to me. Like,
well, I mean, they were kind of in the spot, like, you have to sign him now, right? I mean, you can't. All of a sudden, he defeats Jericho. He's a free agent. And then WWE snatches him up next week, right? He could literally end up on Raw.
Yeah, but then AR Fox doesn't win a match. They sign him anyway.
True.
Like, just because you get a win doesn't mean you get a contract.
AR Fox did not defeat Chris Jericho.
No, but this is also not the Calgary Kid climbing a ladder to win a contract to only be revealed as the Miz. Like, it's just, it was just weird to me. Like, this just kind of fits into that booking stuff on AEW. You gotta go, huh? That's where we're going now? Okay.
So I like the point that you made because I had a similar reaction unknowingly until you just described your reaction to it because it was the exact same. So 1-2-3 Kid Razor Ramon was shocking, especially back then because jobbers didn't win. I mean, you'd watch squash matches all the time on WWE television, whether it be Superstars or Raw back then.
I never saw Iron Mike Sharp win a match.
No. Barry Horowitz, when he won against Skip from the Body Donnas, that was a big deal back then.
By the way, the biggest upset I ever saw was the Bulky Brothers winning a match in the first Crockett Cup back in like 1984.
See, I don't even know. I did not know that. So you consider that bigger? Do you consider that bigger than Razor Ramon 1-2-3 Kid?
The way they hyped it up, the Mulkey Brothers had never won a match on television. They looked like knockoff. They looked like if a knockoff retail store did a Ric Flair doll.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's got blonde hair, but like nothing else about it looks right. That's what the Mulkey Brothers looked like.
Okay.
And I can't remember the team they were facing, but
Warriors had to have been. I'm just kidding.
It was like the Super Destroyer. It was like some generic mass tag team, but built them up for like weeks in the Crockett Cup about how this team's coming in. They're like undefeated. They're the baddest tag team. And we didn't have the internet to go off of to, you know, check the story. We just kind of went, okay, cool. This would be really cool to see these guys beat up the Mulkeys, and maybe we can get them and the Road Warriors or them, you know, whoever it was. And then the Mulkeys won. And the entire you watch the TV arena just kind of like nobody applauded. Like, they were just like, what the hell just happened? Like, it was just complete shock that went out. As a 7-year-old, I was like, wrestling is real. Like, it sinked me in because these guys never won. They always got destroyed, but all of a sudden out of nowhere, they got a fluke victory. So for me as a 7-year-old, that was the biggest upset. And then Razor and 1-2-3 Kid though did top that one, but as a kid, Mulkey Brothers were pretty fantastic.
So back to what you said, though, that I thought was a very good point, was that it was shocking for Razor 1-2-3 Kid with what happened last night with Action Andretti and Jericho. You were like, this is interesting. So this is the direction they're going. And I don't know if that's just the way that wrestling fans have changed over the years as well. Back in 93 and 84, as you're pointing out, like, wrestling was real. Kayfabe was real. We didn't know about the behind-the-scenes stuff as much as we do now, because there's actually a really great story behind this that's being reported right now by Dave Meltzer. Here in 2022, it's like, what's the deal with this kid? Why did they do this? And we want to know more about it. So maybe it's different generations as well. But I thought it was a very interesting point that you made, that back in 93, 84, it's like, wow, this is shocking. In 2022, you're like, what are they doing here?
Real quick, one more thing. It was also the presentation of the match. Like, Andretti was getting some offense early in that match, and you know, he kind of kept looking like he might have a chance.
And that's actually, it's funny that you bring that up, because following Andretti's victory over Jericho, Sean Waltman contrast his win over Ramon, because obviously there was a lot of comparisons, with Andretti's fresh victory on Twitter. Waltman tweeted out, "I just got the shit beat out of me by Scott before he charged the corner. I moved and hit the moonsault body block. I got zero offense in before that. Chris had a competitive match with Andretti before putting him over," end quote, end tweet, however you want to put it. That's exactly what you just meant right there, right, Dr. Trey?
Yeah, as you were watching the match, you're like, this Andretti kid's got a chance. Like, he's hanging around. Like, when you're watching Scott and Sean, it was like, Scott's destroying this kid. Scott's toying with this kid. Like, he's playing with his food. And then it was one mistake costing the match. Like, Waltman got, like, he just, like you said, zero offense, got his ass kicked for like 10 minutes before out of nowhere getting a victory. Whereas Andretti looked competitive with an aging Chris Jericho.
Wow, aging. Okay.
Aging.
Wow, shots fired. There's actually a really good story about this that I love. This comes to us from Wrestling Inc. On the latest Wrestling Observer Radio, Dave Meltzer revealed how the match came together, saying, quote, "The story behind this is that Action Andretti had a match on one of the streaming shows against QT Marshall," Meltzer said. "Chris Jericho was watching the match and decided at that moment that this guy's going to be a star. So he decided he was going to make him a star. Once that happened, Jericho had, and presumably AEW president and head of creative Tony Khan, began putting together the plan for the match once Jericho finished his feud with against Claudio Castagnoli. That rivalry accumulated this past Saturday at Ring of Honor's Final Battle pay-per-view, when Jericho lost the Ring of Honor World Championship to Castagnoli by tapping out to Castagnoli's giant swing. Andretti began his career in 2019 and had wrestled for independent promotions such as GCW and CZW. Most of his matches, however, have taken place in Maryland Championship Wrestling, where he currently holds the MCW Heavyweight Championship. Prior to last night's Dynamite match and his earlier bout against QT Marshall, Andretti has only made a few appearances for AEW, competing in a handful of enhancement matches against the likes of Dante Martin and Private Party. Dr. I love that story. Jericho's just watching the show, and Andretti's in a match with QT Marshall, and he's like, this guy's going to be a star. I'm going to make him a star. That's a pretty selfless decision there by Chris Jericho. Two, I wonder if recent stuff behind the scenes with AEW, where Jericho stepped up as this leader, if that stuff didn't happen in All Out post-media scrum, would he have done this? Would we have seen this happen? I don't know. We'll never know. But I just love that story that Jericho's watching the streaming show, AEW Dark, or AEW Dark Elevation. He's like, this kid's got it. I'm making him a star. I mean, what the hell, man? That's pretty badass.
Let me ask you this. So did you watch it live, or did you watch it on the replay or something?
I watched it on DVR about like a half hour behind. Okay. But I don't check into Twitter and all that stuff.
Yeah, I watched it this morning. And I read the story and I'm like, okay, then Jericho's a better scout than I am, because I don't see it.
I'm kind of with you on that. Keep going.
I see a good-looking young kid, and then I see, you know, like, I don't see star power yet. I mean, honestly, like, body build wise, he looks like everybody else in pro wrestling. Like, I don't see, and I didn't see the match that Jericho saw with QT that made him think that. Like, I just see a clean cut baby face young guy that's built just like everybody else. Like, I don't see anything special about the presentation. So Jericho sees something in him that I don't. And I think I'm a pretty good astute. I'm pretty astute when it comes to recognizing future talent and guys who are going to be stars. I love the story in the sense of Jericho kind of pulling somebody up out of obscurity and making them into a star. That's very selfless.
He changed this guy's life.
Yes. And we've seen him do that with other younger guys, whether it was the Orange Cassidy's, you know, things like that, where he's kind of helped elevate some of these younger guys in AEW. So there's a part of me that totally buys into the story. And then you ask a very good follow-up question. Like, if this is not, if this is done, would this have happened before the all-out scrum stuff? And that I have to wonder, because one of the big driving complaints up among the younger people in towns or in the company, and we saw it in some of the MGS promos, was about the infiltration and elevation of former WWE guys over those AEW originals, those guys that were there day one. Where guys come in from WWE and they're already higher on the card than, you know, Darby and Orange and Jack Perry and guys like that. I pointed out the last couple shows was like, if you look at all the champions right now in AEW, none of them are really WWE folks. They're all kind of AEW folks for the most part. So it's kind of weird that all of a sudden this whole thing has shifted where they start focusing on our younger guys, our younger talents, our AEW originals, like post all out scrum. So the optimist in me totally wants to buy into the Jericho story. The diehard wrestling aficionado that I am kind of feels like this is still kind of a publicity work for the company to kind of ease those qualms of some of those guys that have been in the company since day one.
Yeah, very, very surprising, obviously, what took place. And I just love that story because, like we were just saying, Jericho changed this kid's life forever. I mean, this is going to be part of his life. And if something happens with Action Andretti 3, 4, 5 years down the line, we're going to look back at this moment like Chris Jericho made him and changed his life.
How long before they change his name?
I mean, it's a horrible name, right? And to your point about the stuff with the in-ring stuff, I'm with you. I didn't see anything, quote, special. And I hate to say that because I love what took place last night. But that finishing sequence, like, they kind of botched, like, a bulldog. Like, he was, like, being held by Jericho, a rolling bulldog. And then the standing shooting star press is what finishes him off. I would have liked to seen something a little bit more devastating, right, than that to get the pin.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's,
or like a small package, something like they did with 1-2-3 Kid, where, you know, he catches Jericho off guard and hits it. But, you know, I get they wanted to do it clean, but like the standing shooting star press is what finished off Chris Jericho.
A wise man in wrestling once told me that your finishing move has to look better than anything else in your arsenal. And I don't think that standing shooting star press looked better than anything else he had thrown earlier.
No. He looked like a budget Ricochet.
He looks like a guy who's an independent wrestling champion.
Yeah.
Like that he doesn't look like a wrestling superstar. He doesn't look, but then again, we saw Hook come out to save Jungle Boy. And I think the combined weight of Jack Perry and Hook is still less than Brian Cage.
It most certainly is. And it was headlined by Ricky Starks. I mean, I love all these guys. They're great. But yeah, try to keep it positive. But with Action Andretti, name does stink. Would have liked to see a lot more stuff from the in-ring work. But very cool story. You know, again, Jericho changed his life, which is badass.
Good question. I got a question real quick.
Okay.
Better name, Action Andretti or Hardcore Holly?
Hardcore Holly is much better.
Okay, because they all sound like Marvel characters.
Yeah, so. Hardcore Holly. It's not even close to me. Not even close. Switching gears here to NXT Deadline recap and review. It came to us this past Saturday, December the 10th, from the WWE Performance Center in Orlando, Florida. Let's see the first match here. Roxanne Perez defeats Zoe Stark, Cora Jade, Kiana James, and Indy Hartwell to win the Women's Iron Survivor Challenge to become the number one contender for the NXT Women's Championship. We'll have more on her in a bit. I had Roxanne Perez, Dr. Trey, and Indy Hartwell. The match concept was hard to understand and follow heading into the show, but once it was executed, it came off very, very well. I really enjoyed the match as it was exciting, fun, and different, adding elements of a Royal Rumble and Iron Man match to it. Great job by all five women setting the standard for how this match would come off moving forward. My only criticism was that in wrestling, we are told that a wrestler sells a pin, and in this match, they get pinned or submitted and then quickly come to because they have to go to the penalty box. Other than that, this was a very fun match, and I'm happy for Roxanne Perez. Dr. Trey, your thoughts on the very first Iron Survivor match?
So I enjoyed it, but, you know, the logical guy in me is looking at a couple of things. You're going, well, what happens with this? But I give those girls a ton of credit for them doing a match that had never been done before and then being able to pretty much pull it off seamlessly. A bunch of credit for it. I'm with you. Like, when you get pinned And the other thing was, like, they would say it was a 90-second penalty box, but then they would start the clock as soon as the person's feet touched the floor. So I do give WWE credit for when somebody would get pinned, they would change the camera shots. So that way the audience can see them kind of selling the move as the referee helps them back to the penalty box, but at least the crowd at home's not focusing on it. I don't understand the first 5 minutes, though, because, like, what if you get pinned in the first 5 minutes? Then somebody has to wait the 90 seconds for somebody to come – for that person to get back out of the cage? Like, that seems counterproductive. That was my one critique with the logic of it. But outside of that, like, I it was fun. It was different. I give them a ton of credit for trying something outside the box. So for the first one, like, it was well done for being the first time. Now, next year, the year after, whatever – we may be like look back and go, God, that was awful because it was the first one.
So. Next match here is Isla Dawn defeating Alba Fire. I had Isla Dawn, Dr. Hate, Alba Fire. I know you were trying to get Isla Dawn's gimmick over, but having the ref have black stuff coming out of his mouth after being sprayed by poison mist earlier this week was a weird look. Sometimes the poison mist gimmick spot leaves people out of action for weeks, like in AEW and in WWE or NXT. But I guess here they could come back and do their job days later. Match was okay, but the gimmick spot was a little too corny for my liking. Dr. Trey, your thoughts here on Isla Dawn defeating Alba Fire?
So I had not really paid attention to Isla Dawn before this match, and then I realized she's actually doing my wife's gimmick. My wife is called the Enchantress, and she spits mist. So I was like, oh, I've seen this before. Oh, yeah, I came up with it. But that was just me. If it's done on TV, it's original. If I do it, it's independent. I liked the match. The finish was odd because, like, she touched his leg, and that caused him to start spitting up black ooze. And then when he comes out to ref again on TV a few days later, like, they really don't, like, he's healthy again. I'm like, if you got black tar coming out of your mouth, you're probably not healthy. Like, there's an issue there.
You should see a doctor.
See a gastroenterologist or whatever they're called. But the match itself, and this is I can't knock it because I like supernatural gimmicks. So it is what it is. But it feels weird to have Alba Fire not only lose all the matches to Toxic Attraction in a row, but then lose this one as well because she might be the toughest chick in NXT, or she's at least presented this way. So it takes a lot to put her down. But I just would have liked to see her at least maybe escape with the win and then do some kind of weird supernatural spot post-match to lead into the follow-up one.
Next match here is the New Day defeating Pretty Deadly to win the NXT Tag Team Championship. We both had New Day getting the victory. Very entertaining tag team match. I loved the lie, cheat, steal title shot spot with all four men laying down and selling that they were hit with the title. This match showed me as a fan that Pretty Deadly should be elevated as a future top tag team as the New Day helped bring them up to their level. It was a really fun match, and the New Day are Triple Crown Tag Team Champs in the WWE. Dr. Trey, your thoughts here as the New Day defeat Pretty Deadly to win the NXT Tag Team titles?
In this match, Pretty Deadly went from being kind of like an obscurity for me to now being one of my favorite acts in all of wrestling. Like, those guys are hilarious. And you know me, I love people who can sell with their face and their actions and have a little bit of comedic snarkiness to them. I love that their gear looked like Santa Claus. Like, they had the red and white right before Christmas. That little subtlety is something that some folks miss. I enjoyed the match. The double down with the title belt shot was great. The finish was good. I loved this match. I thought it did great for both teams. Like, New Day now being Triple Crown Tag Champs is something we haven't had before. You get the elevation of Pretty Deadly. Like, I could see Pretty Deadly being on Raw, and they would be as entertaining as Alpha Academy. Like, I could see Pretty Deadly being in that role that Alpha was at Kurt Angle's birthday party in the next 2 years. Like, they just have that kind of hit factor about them. So, fantastic. I can't say anything else about it. It was beautifully done.
I totally agree. Really, really fun match. Next match here is Grayson Waller defeating Carmelo Hayes, JD McDonagh, Joe Gacy, and Axiom to win the Men's Iron Survivor Challenge to become the number one contender for the NXT Championship. We both had Carmelo Hayes. Really good match. Very well booked. Very entertaining. I think it may be my favorite NXT match on this year. The debut of the Iron Survivor Challenge match was a huge success from my vantage point. Dr. Trey, thoughts on the men's Iron Survivor Challenge match?
So this is how I picture the women's match going. Like, I pictured, like, all the little, like, subtleties of fighting in the penalty box, climbing the top of the penalty box, evading pin, helping people not get pinned so you stay ahead. Like, all those little intricacies that I would have put into the first match, if I was booking it, came out in this match. And hey, it was later in the card, so it made sense. But I loved it. It was fantastically done. It had all the bells and whistles of, like, all the little logical spots that I was questioning in the first match were answered in this one. Those guys, I don't know who produced this one, who put it together, but they did a fantastic job. It fits the Grayson Waller character perfectly as well. Like, all those things came together, so it was really well done. So kudos to those guys. They pulled that match off fantastically.
And then finally, the main event here, Bron Breakker defeats Apollo Crews to retain the NXT Championship. We both had Bron Breakker getting the victory. Match was okay. Didn't seem like the crowd was into it and expected Bron Breakker to retain. Breakker's a great character with a very bright future, but his matches come off very one-dimensional and repetitive to me. I would like to see NXT shake things up with his in-ring presentation. Dr. Trey, your thoughts here as Bron Breakker defeats Apollo Crews.
All right, hold on. I got to rewind this. What can he do that needs to impress you more?
I would like to see something that isn't the same match over and over again, for one. Well, I mean, so this is the same shit we see every single time, right? There's times where he sells the shoulder injury when he's trying to do that press slam into the running power slam, and he doesn't do that, and then he just does a spear out of nowhere, gets the 1-2-3. We're not seeing anything that stretches his in-ring abilities beyond the stuff that they're doing. I think he is has a very, very bright future and is somewhat of a prodigy given his build. But I think that what NXT is doing, and they're doing a very good job of it, is protecting him from showing the stuff that he is still a little green on and favoring the stuff that he's very, very good on. It comes off like, the best way I can compare it is like John Cena matches for a period of time. What's that?
I was agreeing with you. I was about to say, that would be my reference.
Yeah, it's like a John Cena thing, where John Cena was very limited at times with his in-ring stuff, even though later in his career he came off very, very well, and he was protected. And I think they're protecting Braun a little bit too much that eventually could backfire on them in NXT or when he gets called up to the main roster, that he gets reactions similar to a John Cena.
So I agree with you. Like, I feel like he's John Cena and Roman Reigns when they first start getting their pushes. Like, Roman didn't do a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Roman did Superman punch, spear. That was basically in the drive-by kick. He had 3 moves of doom. John Cena at least had 5. Bronze, I think, got 4. So it's very slim, similar to those things. I will give him credit. He's only been wrestling 2 years. Like, at all.
Yeah, totally.
Like, so in that sense, he is a prodigy. I will say, like, you know, it's kind of like Brock. Like, when Brock wrestles a big guy, you get the same match. If Brock wrestles a small guy, those are the matches that you and I say and go, that was fantastic. You know, and it's kind of the same thing. Like, the Bron Breakker, JD McDonough match was great. Loved it. And even the triple threat with Ilya in there, loved it as well. This one, the one thing I will say about this match that I liked was each guy trying to do the other guy's moves. I love when that happens. And they both hit the other guy's moves during the match. So, yeah, it wasn't my favorite match of the night. It wasn't a bad match. It's just one of those things where, like, hey, the crowd's not into it because both guys are good guys. So they, you know, the audience is kind of split on who they want to cheer for. So if I don't have somebody I hate in this match, am I going to cheer for the guy I like a little bit more? And that's why I hate babyface, heel versus heel, because the crowd's just not into it and it translates on TV. But the match itself, I thought was okay. It's just going to be weird. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with Apollo going forward, because obviously he can hang on the NXT level. We've seen him have moderate success on the main roster, but what do you do with him now? Like he had his match. What do? Do you move him back to the main roster, keep him NXT, and then does he stay a babyface, or does he learn a new language and start being, you know, Czechoslovakian all of a sudden? Who knows?
So there you go. Yeah. That is NXT Deadline recap and review. Pay-per-view prediction records. I went 4-1. Dr. Trey went 2-3. We wrapped up the year. The year is over. I went 116-53. Dr. Trey went 103-66. I won 2022 after Dr. Trey won 2021. So that is in the books. We'll restart doing this again come Royal Rumble season. After the first year, it'll be here before you know it. Match of the night and event rating. My event rating, I gave NXT Deadline a 3.8. I loved both Iron Survivor Challenge matches, and I gave my match of the night to the men's Iron Survivor Challenge match, Waller, Hayes, McDonough, Gacy, and Axiom. Dr. Trey, what say you, event rating and match of the night?
I was at a 3.7. Really enjoyed both. I mean, there wasn't anything bad on the card, at least, but everything, a couple things were really good. my match tonight was New Day and Pretty Deadly. Like, I just loved that their dynamic. I thought it was really well done. And I'm not going to forget that, you know, the belt spot we all forgot. Like, that's what's going to stand out in my head. Like, in my head, there's two moments that I remember. Grayson Waller running around the ring, keeping everybody away from him and making sure nobody else got pinned. And then that belt spot. So the belt spot's going to stand out maybe a little bit longer. So I gave it to New Day and Pretty Deadly.
There you go. Feel free to chime in at SRTU Podcast on Twitter. We usually like recap review these shows at the top of it, but obviously the McMahon stuff was pretty big. The second big news story of the week involving Mandy Rose. So we had to basically do chronologically deadline into this, Roxanne Perez winning the Iron Survivor Challenge match, taking on Mandy Rose this past Tuesday. They jumped the gun. They were going to do it right then and there rather than wait for New Year's Evil, which was reportedly on the docket, and Roxanne Perez shocks the world, ends Mandy Rose's 413-day reign as NXT Women's Champion. It was like, oh, okay, this from a booking standpoint, this makes sense. This means Toxic Attraction is probably getting called to the main roster, which we've seen JC Jane and GD Dolan at least performing on SmackDown in the last couple months here and there. But instead, we find out the next day that WWE has reportedly released Mandy Rose, the former, now former NXT Women's Champion. The reason to that, let's get into the story courtesy of Wrestling Inc. The former NXT Women's Champion dropped the title 413 days that she held for 413 days to Roxanne Perez on Tuesday's episode of NXT, and then was released by WWE reportedly for suggestive content on her online subscription service on Fantime on Wednesday. On Thursday's Wrestling Observer Radio, Dave Meltzer provided more information about Rose's release, including how her content came to the attention of NXT head Shawn Michaels. Quote, I guess there was a meeting and Matt Bloom, formerly known as Prince Albert, which is hypocritical and ironic at the slightest, and also Tensei, brought to Shawn Michaels. He told them some of the stuff that she's been putting on her subscription service, Meltzer said. He told Shawn what was there, and Shawn's immediate thing was, we've got to get the title off of her immediately. So they switched around the whole show, got the title off of her. According to reports, about 15 minutes before the show aired, news had come out. They told Mandy Rose, like, you're dropping the title tonight, which she had no problem with. Dave Meltzer further said they had advertised the match for January 10th. I believe they were going to do the title change, that Perez was going to win the title, but it was not going to be then. And of course, right after they got the title from her, then they fired her. Meltzer noted that Rose's subscription service has been around throughout her tenure as champion, but that her recent content was something WWE couldn't look past. Meltzer said the feeling was that she way crossed the line, and they believe that they had absolutely no choice but to get rid of her in that situation. Rose released her first comments regarding her firing earlier this past Thursday, thanking fans for their support. She also revealed she has no intention of shutting down her Fantime page. WWE, as I sit here, I believe they still have not acknowledged that they've released her. But this is just a wild story, Dr. Trey. You cannot find, like, exactly what she, at least I can't, exactly what she posted that it was so racy. I know that there's a video out there of her in a pool where, like, you could clearly see her breasts as clear as day. I don't know if that was the suggestive racy content that they're pointing towards. I didn't know what Fantime was. I don't have a Fantime subscription, as shocking as that may be now, especially over the last 24 hours. This entire thing is, like, wild to me. And it doesn't seem like Mandy Rose really gives a crap, because she's probably making more money doing the Fantime stuff, especially now that there's this attention to it, than she would have in professional wrestling. And maybe this is something that she ends up doing. I don't know. I can't see her going to an AEW after this. I can't see her going to an Impact Wrestling. I don't know if she'll go back into professional wrestling. But this whole story is very, very strange, and also very, very shocking and surprising at the same time, Dr. Trey.
Yeah, I don't know where your questions with this are going to go after my statement on it, so I'll just kind of wait and
okay, this is interesting.
Get into it. So the reports I heard, there were some pictures with her and her husband, former NXT star Tino Sabatelli, that were very, very racy and beyond what WWE deems as acceptable content for their superstars.
Is it porn? Is that what you're saying? I don't know why we're beating around the bush here.
I didn't see the actual, I don't know what the pictures were. It was just a very steamy shower type situation from what I read anyway.
Okay.
So I don't know if it was straight on porn or whatever. Those sites, though, are known for that kind of content. And like Lana, CJ Perry, she has an OnlyFans pay or like something like that as well. It's not fan time, it's not OnlyFans, something else. So there are a lot of women in professional wrestling who make money on the side from posting content to those sites. It's if you're not in WWE or AEW, it's kind of like the wild, wild west when it comes to it. Like you can basically push the envelope as far as you want to go, because at the end of the day, it's going to affect your bookings and your money. You might make a bunch more money, but you may not get the bookings for wrestling, and then your fandom kind of goes down a little bit, stuff like that. I don't have an issue with WWE making the move, because obviously they're a publicly traded company, and I know that's always a cop out, but yeah, they're also, you know, small children who are diehard wrestling fans, and you know, even teen boys that are diehard wrestling fans and stuff like that. So, you know, she's the face of the women's division for, you know, NXT. Like that was her playground. And, you know, you have to be somewhat responsible in those situations. And it wasn't like, you know, she was hurting for money. She has a well-paying job with NXT and WWE. She was already posting content. It's just like, there are times I can cross the line. And I don't know if this is as knee-jerk a reaction. Like, I kind of feel like there's more in the conversation between her and upper management that led to her release that we haven't got the details on, because I'm sure they probably went to her and said, hey, can you just remove that content? And then she stood her ground. And if that's the case, then you have to come to the crossroads. So it's shocking. It's, I don't know. I'm a big believer in free enterprise, but at the same time, when you work for a corporation, you have to abide by corporate guidelines. And like, I work for a gutter company and we have a social media policy that if I violate it, I lose my job regardless of how well I'm performing in this company. So everybody's got their box, their sandbox they have to play in, and you just got to make sure you stay inside the sandbox and don't jump out. So it's shocking and it's saddening, because Mandy's one of my favorite female wrestlers in the world. She has gotten so much better over the last couple of years.
That's what's a shame.
It just sucks, because I'm like, damn, this girl's really good in the ring. Does she need to do the other stuff that now has cost her job? And then I have friends of mine who are like, she should be allowed to do whatever she wants to do. And I'm like, yeah, she could, but company has a right to fire her too. So
it is, yeah. Really, and there's a lot of people out there saying like, there's a lot of hypocrisies out there. Obviously with Shawn Michaels, he posed for Playgirl, yeah. Not Playboy, but they obviously had a big relationship with Playboy for a long time in WWE and all that stuff. And there's the hypocrisies that everybody's talking about. But I think the point that you're making, Dr. Trey, is a lot's changed. WWE hasn't done anything with Playboy in like 15 years. So I think that ship has sailed, and WWE wants to be viewed differently in the world of pop culture in the eyes of the society than they were back then, when they may not have really given a damn. I don't know. None of the content is out there for us to judge, because you got to have a membership to have it. But it's just like so strange. The entire thing is so strange. And to your point where like she was coming along and doing a great job, I'm watching that match, Roxanne Perez, and she wins. And I'm thinking to myself, in 2 weeks, you and I sit down for the award show, and I think Mandy Rose is in the discussion as someone that is brought up as a female wrestler of the year. And now, like, what just took place over the last 48 hours, it's like, I don't think we could do that anymore.
I'm still going to nominate her.
She's definitely in the contention, right? I mean, she had a great year. She's really come along. And it's sad to see, because, you know, go back to those early days of her in NXT where she was like, she was like on top of a, I don't know if this was Eva Marie or her. I always get them confused in the beginning there. But Mandy Rose has definitely come along and far away. But, you know, she'd come down to the ring and the camera would change and all that stuff. And it was more about her looks than her in-ring ability. And her in-ring ability wasn't all that great. She's well known as the girl who tripped down the ring going to WrestleMania 36. And she kind of erased that all with a great character of Toxic Attraction, good in-ring performances, fun matches, and a great title reign. It's sad to see, ultimately, right?
Yeah, and by the way, so I was thinking about this. I'm like, actually, so Roxanne beating Mandy to me was a bigger upset this weekend than actually Andretti beating Chris Jericho.
Really? I saw that one coming, Dr. Trey.
Not on a Tuesday night NXT.
I
saw it at New Year's Eve, but not if you watch the show, yeah. But when I got the report that Roxanne beat Mandy and ended the 4-12-day streak, I was like, whoa, really?
So you didn't watch the whole show then, right?
I didn't watch it live. No, I ended up having to watch it later.
So once they pulled the trigger on them having the match, I'm like, they're doing it tonight.
Yeah.
I mean, I get you, like, okay, they didn't promote it, but I thought once they announced the match, because if you and I sat here, and let's say Mandy Rose wasn't fired and she retained on Tuesday, you and I would have gone, what the fuck did they just do? Why did they do this 3 days later with Roxanne Perez? Like, it makes sense right now for Roxanne Perez to be champion and to move Mandy Rose up towards back to the main roster.
I think the whole situation with doing the match on Tuesday, the whole situation before the firing occurred, I think that was more surprising and shocking. I'll put it that way. Like, I, in my head was, hey, we're saving this for New Year's Evil. It's the start of a new year. It would make sense to start off with a new champion being crowned in possibly a bigger venue. I don't know where they're doing the show. I don't know if they're doing it at the PC or something.
No, they still are. And New Year's Evil will be at, it's only until Vengeance Day in Charlotte. And I get what you're saying, but to me, I was like, okay, I guess they're going to start like ramping Toxic Attraction come towards the main roster heading into the Royal Rumble or debut at the Royal Rumble. Because, you know, you see that from time to time. It reminded me of Rhea Ripley defeated Shayna Baszler in one of those last NXT televisions 2019 at Full Sail. She becomes women's champion. Shayna goes off television for a long time and then reappears later on at the Royal Rumble in 2020.
That makes sense. I just like the
initial, that's where I was going with it.
Initial knee jerk for me was much more like, I don't know. I guess WWE, because, you know, we say new predictions and stuff like that. Like, it's a little bit more, I don't say easier to predict, but there's usually a natural flow to it. And you're right. Like, if you're watching it live, it would have made more sense. But me watching, you know, catching it the next day, just seeing the results, I was kind of like, whoa, that was kind of like surprising they did it so early. Second thing, we need to start a GoFundMe page to get the Mandy Rose, my fans page. So
my fans, see, you and I just sound so old now. It's the my fans. It's fan time, right? That's what they call it.
It's on the book face, right? I don't know.
Yeah, it's on that my face.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then, we're old now, man.
And then third, the interesting thing about this thing is going to be what they do with Gigi and Jace going out of this. Because to me, I don't know if you, when you were watching the Iron Survivor Challenge, and ever since Cora Jade turned heel, I kind of felt like that would be a natural fit.
I like that. So I do.
Do they just slide Cora into Mandy's spot for a while until they figure out what to do with, you know, Gigi and JC? Because you saw the Cora Roxanne interaction during the Iron Woman Survivor Challenge. So it makes sense if they go that route, because I don't think you want to break up the Toxic Attraction gimmick, because it's been very successful for the last year and a half. So you don't want to, you know, it's kind of like when they killed remember the BFFs when they had Charlotte and Sasha and all them together, and Summer Rae was in the group and it was really good, and then all of a sudden it just splintered and died. It's like, this is really good. Do you, and we've seen that Triple H likes groups, Shawn likes factions. I just kind of feel like they'll slide somebody else into that role and keep the group around. Maybe hopefully it'll go better than CM Punk leading the Nexus.
Cora Jade would be a great pick, but I also think Gigi and Jason Jane on their own as a tag team on the main roster are just as good. And there's reports out there that were saying that there were no plans for Mandy Rose to go up to the main roster and that JC Jane and Gigi Dolan would be going up there, which would have been strange. And it doesn't seem like that kind of jives with what Triple H has done during his reign as the head of content. So I don't necessarily believe that. I get your vibe there on Cora Jade, you know, like finding the lost puppies, but I also think Gigi and JC Jane would be good on their own as well.
Yeah, no, they absolutely would be. And we need dedicated women's tag teams and not just these hodgepodges that get thrown together.
True. True. So
you get throughout the next team as well. So
yeah. Overall, strange week. Vince wants to come back. Mandy Rose is gone and was champion the day before. NXT Deadline was a lot of fun with a new match concept, and a huge upset took place over Chris Jericho on AEW Dynamite. And that was only like the cusp of everything that's happened the past week, which is like the perfect way to end the quote regular shows of 2022 here on this week's edition of the Still Real to Us show. With that said, let's close up this week's edition of the show and get a couple plugs and sponsors out of the way. You can download the show every Thursday at realguyradio.com, Russell Chatnet on Twitter, and the Still Real to Us show iTunes feed. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to help us climb the charts on iTunes. You can follow us individually on Twitter for myself at SRTU Jeff, and for Dr. Trey Franklin at The Dr. Trey. And of course, don't forget to follow the show on Twitter at SRTU Podcast. With that being said, what is going on in the wonderful world of Dr. Trey Franklin this week?
Well, like Jeff said, you can follow me on Twitter at The Dr. Trey. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram, Dr. Trey Franklin. When you hop on the old Facebook, Bookface, MyFace, whatever it's called, get on there. Check out Rocket City Championship Wrestling because they're still running really strong. Big show coming up this Saturday night as we get closer and closer to the Rocket City Rumble, which is one of our biggest shows of the year, coming up sometime in January. So be on the lookout for that as well. But go on there, check out the good content. That doesn't cost you anything extra. There's no subscription fees to check out Rocket City Championship Wrestling. But also just go check out your local independent wrestling shows. Go see the Jungle Boys before they become Jack Perry's. Go see the Orange Cassidy's before they team up with Hook and become Orange Hook or whatever it is. Go check them all out. Find them today before they cost you much more down the road.
So there you go. Support all the great things that support the Still Real Though Show, and spread the word. Tell your friends to download SRTU each and every week. Subscribe. Like the show. Do whatever you can to help us climb the charts on iTunes, of course. With that said, holiday programming schedule. Once again, next week's edition of the show, episode number 671. We recap professional wrestling the year 2022 and listen back to our bold predictions from the first show of the year. That's on December 22nd. 2 weeks from now, December 29th, episode 672, we wrap up the year with our 2022 SRTU Award Show special. And then 3 weeks from now, January 5th, 2023, episode 673, we kick off the new year with our 2023 Wrestling Preview Special. We enter holiday programming scheduling mode here on SRTU. If anything major breaks, we will obviously do a bonus pod if we can during the next 3 weeks, but everything is going to be looking back and looking forward towards looking back this past year and then looking forward to the next year. Join us during all that. It's a great way to celebrate the holidays, and Dr. Trey and I are looking forward to it very much so. Tune in. The next 3 weeks are a lot of fun here on SRTU. With that said, for Dr. Trey Franklin, I'm Jeff Peck. Until next week, holiday programming schedule kicking off. This is the Still Real Though Show. The top of 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 the top of